This is an AMI podcast.
I'm Kelly McDonald.
I'm Ramya Amadhin, and this is Kelly and Ramya.
Almost open, folks, the gateway to your weekend. This is Kelly and Ramya. Welcome back to the program, wherever you are checking us out around the world. Appreciate you being with us, listening in on TuneIn Radio or OO Tunes, whatever it might be, or checking out the podcast. Subscribe using your favorite podcast platform. We'd appreciate you doing so and joining us whenever you can, in whatever way you can. We call this segment Cut for Time, ladies and gentlemen. Every Friday, we like to weigh in, recap some of the segments that we've had over the past week on the program. And we invite you to settle back and maybe take note of them, because if you missed them, go check them out. We call this Cut for Time. And we're joined today, Ramya and I, by Grant Hardy, reporter on the program, reporter producer for us out in Vancouver. Guys, I'm going to start things off. Feels like a pattern lately. I seem to be doing this. I think I'm picking the I won't say the wrong day, but always the first day we get doing this. On Tuesday, health and wellness coach Francis Wong explained the types of burnout and how to spot the signs early. Take a listen.
In this case, life factors can also contribute to burnout. And these things include such things as unmanageable workloads, pressures of deadlines, and that could be something like rushing around to take someone to medical appointment after medical appointment, maybe too much work and not enough time to decompress, and spending so much time taking care of other people's needs that we don't have enough time to get our own stuff done. We definitely need timeouts, so taking a day off here or there for a breather is something that we can strive for. And sometimes this isn't possible, especially if there's a lack of support. Say you're the only child and you have siblings, but they're far away, so the responsibility of taking care of elderly parents falls on you. And I'll also add that it could be your own personality traits that are a hindrance and contributing factor. So if you're someone who is a perfectionist and always needing to be in control, that could potentially lead to burnout. So what you said, Kelly, like everyone's limitations are slightly different.
I love that we covered off so much of this stuff, because there is so many interpretations of the things we put on ourselves and may give us extra pressure. But you're who you are and you're not going to change. It's the managing to learn how to cope and deal with the way that you are and the things that do pressure you, and learning, you know. And I remember this particularly when I started doing TV work, especially when we were working on Blindsided, I'd always be asked, hey, where are you next week? What do you wear? I don't know. You don't know. And a lot of time it became too overwhelming. It became too much to, oh, in 2 weeks, I'm going to be doing this. I have to be ready with that. I have to make sure I have that for that episode together. I have to learn that. It became to where there's just no way I could keep track. And I started to learn to take it bit by bit. Prepare. Don't look at that whole roadway. Don't look at the map and say, wow, oh, geez, here we've got mountains over here. This is a narrow trail. I'll slip off the side and land in the water and die. Whatever. Don't do that. Because it becomes too much. I had to learn that about myself, because otherwise you set yourself up. But Francis touched on so many things here that made me really think about the control that I had to learn that I had. I never wanted to commit to things. It was too much pressure for me, too much stress in my head, and brought anxiety on. I didn't want to be on boards of stuff. And I had to learn it was okay to say, yeah, I think I need a little more time to do that. I'm struggling along with that. And just be straight up and honest. Instead of saying, well, you have to achieve this or you're done. Done with what? Well, what if I just can't? What kind of person does that make me? A person who just at that time couldn't get something done. And there's so much that time teaches us. And I really have to embrace that kind of thing. And I really thought this was an important topic, because yes, obviously some of us have stress that we cannot control. We can't do anything about, whether it's looking after the people in our world, work, some stressful job, because you're dealing with life and death. There are certainly other things that happen. And sometimes we can't say, well, that's your limit. You should be able to handle that. That shouldn't be a problem. I've decided that for you. Nobody can do that. It is a lot, in my opinion, and for me, and I really felt that in this conversation with Frances as she touched on the different areas, you know, those areas where I've had to stop and say, ah, I remember that. Remember when I was a wreck with that kind of thing? And it gets so hard, Ramya, to sometimes contextualize that self for yourself.
Yeah. I mean, there was a point in time, and I still think it's pretty relevant now, that hustle culture just felt like a fad, right? We were always hustling, and the side gig economy was a big deal. And, you know, everybody was so proud of how busy they were and how busy they looked like they were. And, you know, nobody really talked about the mental health aspects of the 9-to-5, let alone all the extra stuff you were doing. But in this clip alone, we heard about all the nuances of, you know, being a caregiver, you know, just the changing stages in life and having to adjust to that, where you might have a new baby or, you know, your partner has taken on a new job. Like, there are all these shifting and adjusting things, moving fluid things in life that come up and change how our day-to-day routines, our day-to-day consistencies, and our day-to-day commitment levels for work changes. So it's really wonderful that nowadays we're having more of these conversations, and not just anecdotally, but also, you know, on a bigger picture, bigger scale with employers and having more flexibility arrangements just kind of looped into our work hours and work conversations and regimes. But it's still underneath all that, there's, I think, a lot of fear for people, for individuals, thinking like, I can't get something done, or I'm afraid to bring this up at work, or, you know, this is not what they want from me, so I don't feel good voicing it. It's just like how, you know, there's the expectation when you're in college or university to take a full-time course load, to be a full-time student. Mm-hmm. So when you can't do that, or when you need extra accommodations, or if you're a person with a disability, you have to have upfront conversations about, no, I can't manage this, right? Or I won't be able to do what is the expected norm. And that still feels like very niche, Grant.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's so much to talk about here, but just to give a couple quick points. On the one hand, it's great that we're talking a little bit about more about mental health and anxiety and burnout than we used to. And, you know, one thing I've been learning about, for example, lately is the concept of emotional labor. So, you know, people will talk about like, well, I'm the guy, you know, that like pay the most money, you know, towards the house or whatever. So I'm like doing, you know, the most support. But, you know, in reality, the person who might be working the hardest is, you know, the person doing the emotional labor. So it could be anything like being the person who's kind of on call to, you know, talk someone out of the deep end, or, you know, provide some basic or advanced care to a loved one, or even to kind of figure out all the logistics of the house, you know, everything from kind of like, how are we going to make it through all of our, you know, appointments today? Who is going to pick up the kids and when, you know, even stuff like, you know, grandma doesn't, you know, get along too well with this person, but she gets along better with this person. So I've got to come up with, you know, the seating plan for dinner later today. Like, just all this stuff that seems really minor, but actually is very, very emotionally demanding. On the other side, though, we are constantly telling people, you know, the younger generations are just lazy. They don't have to do the hard work that we used to have to do, whatever. When in reality, there is so much stress and pressure on those people, everything from the gig economy to sort of like, what's the world going to be like in 20 years? Am I ever going to be able to, you know, own a home, and this or that? So yeah, there's a lot of pressure out there. And I think continuing to talk about burnout and mental health is going to be really important. A little bit of a tough conversation as well on Monday that we had with civil rights advocate Danielle McLaughlin, who talked about the supposed purpose and problems with the Safe Streets Act. Here she is talking about why laws like this are unnecessary.
One of the things lawmakers rarely do, to my great shock, is say, well, what's already against the law? Well, damaging somebody's car, that's long been against the law. Blocking traffic, also against the law. And robbing somebody, you know, that it's not a big surprise to find out that assaulting or robbing people has never been lawful.
Legal.
So it wasn't lawful. It wasn't legal to do any of those things. But in the effort of creating this act, you know, they said, well, you know, let's reach out and pull in as many different things that we don't like as we can.
Yeah, I mean, I always find the rhetoric of these kinds of laws really fascinating. First of all, just the names for something that is very negative. I mean, this law was intended to restrict people in need from asking for money, and society was actually spending money to ticket them, and rather than, you know, heaven forbid, provide help for people who need help. But I always find it interesting, like, number one, that negative or punitive laws often have very positive names, like the safe streets law, the freedom whatever law, the happy law. That's quite, I just find that really interesting too. But also just all the rhetoric surrounding laws, like, you know, if you don't support this law, you know, you must support violence, or, you know, you're obviously supporting, you know, whatever, theft. When in reality, that's not true at all. We've seen this with different privacy laws that were tried to be put in place, you know, on the internet too. You know, if you don't agree to this law, you obviously support whatever sort of violence or exploitation that's supposedly covered in the law. But then as we look at other laws and regulations that are already out there, a lot of those things are already kind of outlawed. So one thing I would like to see is maybe a little bit less politics, a little less rhetoric, and just making sure that we're not making laws, Kelly, for stuff that we already have, mm-hmm. but also just making sure that our laws are, you know, kept pretty basic, not a lot of hidden connotations, just basic and easy to read and understand.
And, you know, when you stop and think, is it interpretation, so that you have the flexibility for the law, the courts, but whomever you wish to accuse can do whatever they want to the individuals in question based on, well, any weird circumstance can happen that we may not have thought of, that we'll leave the law broad enough so that we can take the law and read into it what we make of it for the purpose of this particular situation that we might be confronted with that we haven't thought about yet. And we know that's how come there's so much latitude left by some laws when they're implemented. But as Danielle and you both pointed out here, Grant, we are talking about laws that exist on the books. It's pretty straightforward. Don't damage a vehicle if someone says, no, I don't need my window done, and you're a squeegee kid going, oh, yeah, you do, clink. So I do caution, because we see this in so many different cases, Ramya, a broadening of a law or a making of a law that leaves so much open to interpretation for convenience.
Well, with the disability community, and when we have any kind of advocacy, we often, like always, I would say, bring up teeth and whether legislation has any, whether we know what the teeth are, if there are any. You know, like, there's just so much to keep track of. When it comes to trusting that a system works and trusting that the people who are running the systems or pushing through different things at any given level are understanding why this is a law, because we've talked about that with Danielle as well, right? Why this is a law and not just a general understanding of something, right? Like, hey, it makes sense. It's common sense not to do a certain thing. Why does it have to be law? And I think obviously a big component of that is because we want it to to come with consequences. So yeah, whenever there's something like a full of gray area, you're just kind of left questioning what was the purpose of this anyway. Let's move to Wednesday's show for the last point on Cut for Time. AMI communications specialist Greg David told us about the second annual taping of the All Access Comedy Special at the upcoming Halifax Comedy Festival. And here he is talking about what it means to have a gig like this for up-and-coming disabled comedians.
Something where we're surprised that it hadn't been done before. And the production company that we worked with and have worked with this time around, Pilot Light Productions, they were amazed that nothing like this had ever been done before. You know, they work with the Halifax Comedy Fest every year. So it's been a real thrill for them. I don't think I'm putting words into their mouths. They just have loved this. And you know, making it, putting it together, packaging it, and putting it together for AMI and for our audience, it's just a win-win for everybody. And it's introducing you to new comedians. Like, you know, people may know DJ DeMar, nightmares because he's so well known, you know, not only within the AMI world, but also, you know, kind of nationally and internationally down in the States. But you might not know necessarily some of the other comedians on the docket. So it's all about, you know, discovering those new comedians as well.
You know, it really is just a shout out that there are so many talented individuals out there, so many people who've been working hard under the radar for so long to get their personas out there, to get their work out there. And, you know, it's amazing that now we can keep in touch kind of individually on an indie level with people, whether it be on social media or supporting through Patreon or something like that, and just, you know, keep tabs at some level with work and bring followings to the table and keep in touch with people on, you know, levels, even if it's not just gigantic international stage worthy. But at the same time, you have stuff like this that happens, right? Big collaborations, big features. And when you get people with disabilities on there, it's just a huge reason to celebrate, guys, because then we can get the talent more talked about and give kind of a leg up for people, Kel.
It's interesting because a lot of time we think, hey, I've got to fend for myself. I got to get my name out there. I've got to do this and that. But when we have vehicles like this where we can all show strength, and there's always safety in numbers, or that power of we're putting a show on. We're a bunch of people who do the same thing. Yes, we have disabilities. Yes, we independently go for our different gigs. But you know what? It's nice to have that network to show that strength, to not to become part of commonplace, not unusual out there. To, oh, geez, disabled comics. You see a show like this? Wonderful. But also it's that handholding, that connection, Grant, that these folks are doing, which would push it forward as well, because they can at least, hey, I sent you an email. There's a really interesting festival you may want to check out that I appeared at that last year that's coming up in your area. Any little tips, any little handholding?
Absolutely fantastic to see more diversity on the screen, especially in arts and entertainment, where very talented people often don't get the chance to express themselves because of their diversity. It's fantastic to see more talent on screen.
You bet. Grant will be working a bit with me next week on the program. Rumi will be working off on some other assignments at times. So we'll be a little hit and miss. But Grant, we welcome you back Monday for headlines for sure.
Fantastic. Have a wonderful, wonderful weekend, guys.
Grant Hardy joining us. We do this segment every week at this time. Cut for time. Check out our podcast if you want to go back, review some of these segments. You can do that by subscribing to Kelly and Rumia using your favorite podcast platform. We'll be back in a couple of moments. And when we return, we'll wrap up the program, tell you a little bit about some really fantastic programming coming up this weekend over on AMI Audio. Lots for you there. And I want to talk about Rainbow and some colors of pups. Hey, this one you'll like. All you animal lovers, stay tuned. We'll be back and tell you a little bit about our show for Monday after this.
We'll be back with more of Kelly and Ramya after this short break.
Hello, I'm Sean Preece. Join me monthly for Sean of the Shed, where I introduce you to all the technology that can be so useful to us as blind or partially sighted people. Find Sean of the Shed wherever you find all your podcasts.